This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser, episode number 40. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the Sci-Fi Fantasy Book Club and Podcast, where we talk about what we're reading, what's going on in the science fiction and fantasy world, and talk about what people are saying in the discussion forums.
Yeah, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein's our current book, if you didn't know that. And I'm three quarters of the way through. How far are you now, V?
I'm still about halfway, and I have a confession to make. I have had another thing come up that has to get finished by the end of the month, and I don't think I'm going to finish it in time.
Well, for the end of the month. So we may be wrapping up Moon is a Harsh Mistress from Dragon Con, possibly.
Mm-hmm. And we have more on that later.
But first, let's start with our quick burns. Unwritten 2, a pulse-pounding graphic novel, is coming out soon. In fact, mine just shipped. Unwritten is a collection of The Unwritten, a story that peeks into the secret life of narrative and blood and teeth lurking beneath our fantasies and fairy tales. It's sort of, I've read the first volume of this, The Unwritten One, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a Harry Potter-like guy The father of this guy wrote novels about a Harry Potter-like character based on this guy. And so now he's starting to find that the world that was created in the books is bleeding into modern life and how much it is true and how much of it is not. Unwritten Volume 2, The Inside Man, is now shipping.
Yeah, this seems really cool. I'd never actually heard of this before, but it's published by Vertigo. And it sounds very interesting and a little bit violent almost, or maybe scary. Getting the right feelings from this?
There's a tiny bit of violence for sure, because there's murders. Writers get murdered. There's a lot of allusions to famous writers like Mary Shelley and Mark Twain and whatnot. And there's definitely a spooky side, although I don't think it's extremely scary. It's just kind of, it's got a little horror. It's more murder mystery than horror. Let me put it that way.
So it's a graphic novel, but it's not a graphic novel.
It's not. Well, there's a little bit of graphic, but not hugely graphic. And I think the idea is just amazing, of this sort of like books having power over reality and the blurring of the lines and Tommy Taylor, which is the Harry Potter-like guy, trying to figure it all out and figure out his own past. And there's this sort of hints and suggestions about, well, how did Tommy Taylor actually come into being? Did his father write him into being? Is he actually
not
a real
ending story-ish, if you think about it?
Yeah, it's true, actually. It's got a lot of similarities to that. So not that we normally stray into graphic novel territory all that much, but because of the topic of science fiction books and reality, I figure if any of you are going to read a graphic novel, this might be a one to pull you into it.
Speaking of graphic novels, did you happen to see Scott Pilgrim this weekend?
I did.
Did you chokingly love it?
And I loved it. Yeah. It's like you surprised me. No, I thought it was great. It was like watching a video game play out in real life. It was amazing.
Yeah, I really loved it too. Roger was a little unsure of it.
Yeah, we talked about it on East Meets West. He wasn't as blown away by it as I was.
I'll have to go listen to that episode. We talked a little bit about it on Monday. And we did have one common complaint. And I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it. So if you absolutely do not want any spoilers, maybe skip ahead a couple minutes. I'm not going to spoil it for people, but I just want to say the decision he made at the end, I did not agree with.
Well, there are two teams, aren't there?
Yes, apparently there are.
It's just like Twilight in that respect, but pretty much in no other way.
Actually, I read a blog post about how Scott Pilgrim is like Twilight for boys.
I could sort of see that. It's basically, instead of like, ooh, romantic vampire comes into my life, it's like nifty, you know, hippie,
like I'm a geeky,
hipster chick comes into my life.
Hipster chick, yeah, who likes me.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on, there was a great post on IO9 done by Anna Lee about China Mieville.
I should point out, there was a listener wrote to me, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or at my email address, IO9 is spelled I-O-9.
Yeah, and?
Because he was like, is it spelled E-Y-E-O-H? I don't ever spell it out. So there you go. For you, I-O-9.com.
Yes, the letter I, the letter O, and the number 9.com. One of our favorite sites. But anyway, she sat down with China, who is the author of The City and the City and also Perdido Street Station, among many other excellent books. And he had a funny thing to say about J.J. Abrams that really caught our eye. And here's the quote, and you guys could tell us what you think about this in the forums. He said, I never met J.J. Abrams. I am not a member of his fan club or his anti-fan club. I disliked Cloverfield a very great deal. I dislike Star Trek intensely.
Oof. Wow.
Wow. That hurts me in the guts. I thought it was terrible. Oh. And I think part of my problem is that I feel like the relationship between J.J. Abrams' projects and geek culture is one of relatively unloving repackaging, sort of cynical. I taste contempt in the air. Now, I'm not a child. I know that all big sci-fi projects are suffused with the contempt of big money for its own target audience. But there's something about J.J.'s projects that makes me particularly uncomfortable, as compared to somebody like Joss Whedon, who, even when there are misfires, I feel likes me and loves me and is on some cultural level my brother and comrade. And I don't feel that way about J.J. Abrams.
That is interesting. And you know what? As much as I love J.J. Abrams and disagree with him on Star Trek.
At least.
And
yeah, Star Trek.
Cloverfield we could talk about. But J.J. Abrams is trying to be cerebral in a way that doesn't conflict with the medium's norms of allowing intelligence. And so I think it comes off as shallow sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you see that in Lost, where there's lots of allusions to comic books and lots of allusions to literature, but they never really tie in together. It almost could come off to some people as like, I'm trying to impress you with how much I know, but I'm not showing any depth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. What Joss Whedon does is he actually shoots himself in the foot by showing you that depth of knowledge. So when he goes into Firefly, he creates something from the ground up. He takes Chinese culture and European culture and he blends them together in ways that are not important at all to the mainstream success of his show.
And could potentially actually hurt his mainstream success.
It would possibly, yeah, in some cases they do. But we as fans go, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. He threw in that reference, he threw in that, and it means something and it's deep and it's woven in and it comes back again. And so I can see that might be what he's reacting to. That might be where he gets that love from Joss and feels more cold about JJ.
But I do definitely agree on my feeling towards both of those directors. Like with JJ, it's kind of like, you know, you're there for the spectacle, mm-hmm, in a way, and just to watch what's going to happen next. With Joss Whedon, it's more like one of us, you know, like,
yes,
you feel more like he's part of the tribe.
Now, the only time I didn't feel as much like that was with Dollhouse.
Dollhouse I went back and forth on. I really enjoyed the idea of it. It was more the execution that bothered me. I didn't love a lot of the acting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, in theory, I would have really liked the show a lot better had it been helmed differently in an acting sense, not necessarily a directorial sense.
You didn't like seeing Hilo with his shirt off?
Him, I was fine with. I was totally fine with my Tamo. I could watch him all day. It's fine.
I know what you mean, though. And I didn't feel like there were as many of these sort of like secret references. And I felt like what Joss Whedon might have been up to, and what do I know, but it was sort of like having this mainstream standalone episodic take in the first season that drew you in and got you more of that mainstream success before he changed it into this more involved backstory story arc, which he got to in the next season.
I was enjoying the episodic episodes. I found that they were fun, but they did lack that kind of depth. Mm-hmm. And when they started going into the backstory, that's when I really felt like I wanted to learn more about the characters and hear more from them. But it was cut so short that you never really got, I never felt that sense of completion. I felt like there was still a lot more that needed to be told. But that's beside the point. It's two different, very different styles of directing and creating media. And they both do well in their own right.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, they're certainly successful in different ways. Joss Whedon, I think, has come across more hardship and pain and agony. And they did a panel together at Comic-Con, right?
Oh, did they? I missed that.
Yeah, it was a huge event, and they professed their love for one another. So.
Oh, that's adorable. Adorable.
Yeah. All right, moving on. There is in progress, as we record, an amazing online interview of Max Brooks, author of World War Z, as well as The Zombie Survival Guide, and the new graphic novel, The Zombie Survival Guide, Recorded Attacks. Max Brooks is answering the top 10 questions in a Reddit thread as of Tuesday, August 17th at 12 p.m. Eastern time, and there will be a video interview. So it's too late. We're not telling you in time for you to go and actually put your question in, but keep your eyes out on that for the video interview to see what Max Brooks answers.
There's already 923 comments on the Reddit post.
Do you think he'll answer them all?
I don't think so.
Oh, no, it's only the top. It's only the top 10. Sorry.
Oh, that's good. The top ranked ones. Is that how they're doing it?
Yeah, I think you can go in and Reddit and vote. And I apologize that we didn't get this to you earlier so that you could have a chance, if you heard about it, to go and get your questions in. But I think it'll still be interesting to see what questions bubble to the top and what he ends up talking about.
This is a fun question. The first one that's bubbled to the top is from a guy named Ivan Kerrigan, and he says, World War Z was an excellent depiction of how the real world might react to a zombie invasion. But now there are hundreds of thousands of zombie aficionados, if not more. How would the story have to change to account for this?
Have you Heisenberged yourself somehow?
Well, I have a zombie contingency plan, and I know a lot of my friends do. So, you know, if this was really a depiction of the real world and we had a zombie apocalypse and he was telling that story, I think things would be a lot different.
Do you think there's enough people to make a difference, or would it sort of get lost in the noise?
I don't know. I guess we should find out how many people have read the Zombie Survival Guide.
Right.
That would give us a baseline to start.
Because you remember the zombie preparedness people we saw at Dragon Con last year? Mm-hmm. That was real, like, advice. That was, like, real emergency preparedness advice.
Which is good. It just wasn't what I was hoping it was going to be.
No, but it was funny. And honestly, if you followed that advice, you would not only be prepared for the inevitable zombie uprising, but also for earthquakes and tornadoes and hurricanes and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, which is definitely good information to have. Another post from IO9 Tonight, Escaping the Time Machine and Charles Yu's How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe. And this is a very promising set of short stories that has actually earned you the coveted 5 Under 35 selection from the National Book Foundation for Promising Young Writers. It's a very interesting story about how the main character apparently gets trapped in a time loop of his own making because he shoots his future self as he comes out of the time machine.
Oh, that's gotta hurt.
And I'm trying to figure out how exactly that would put you into a loop. Because there was a Futurama episode about this very recently.
Yes, I know. The one with where Fry, they had to keep going forward in time and loop right through to, yeah.
Because the time machine couldn't travel back in time. It could only go forward, so you couldn't change the past.
So you go forward enough in time, the universe starts over again, and it's actually not visiting the past, but it's visiting a replica mm-hmm. of the your past,
right,
as it is recreated over and over again.
Yeah, time travel is something I really got to think very carefully about. You have to.
I have to point out a mild correction. This is not a book of short stories. This is his first novel. His book of short stories did win the 5 Under 35 selection.
Oh, I got confused. Okay, cool. So it's the first novel. But is it that same story?
Yeah. It's the repairman and his dog drifting through a minor universe owned by Time Warner Time.
Well, that's exactly what happened to Fry. He got trapped in the time machine, and but his dog didn't, and his dog died.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Anyway, this sounds great. This is something I would definitely like to pick up and take a look at, because I'm a sucker for a good time travel story, for sure.
Who isn't?
Who isn't these days? And then, more appropriate to our current reading selection, Boing Boing has another update about the forthcoming Heinlein memoir, Volume 1, Learning Curve. It's the authorized biography by William H. Patterson Jr. The Cory Doctorow write-up on Boing Boing points out that it's a little bit sparse in the early days because, since it's an authorized biography, they couldn't just make stuff up. They had to go from sources. And Heinlein himself actually destroyed notes and documentation about his early life because he was embarrassed about things that he had done and said and written.
He didn't want that recorded. He wanted that ignored from history, pretty much.
So you have to reconstruct a lot of that. But once it gets into primary sources and people who knew Heinlein and things that Heinlein had actually written about himself, it really starts to pick up. It depicts a lot of his relationship with L. Ron Hubbard. It depicts the importance of his early marriages and how they fell apart. If you really want to get into the mind of Heinlein, which I know we're going to be talking about a lot when we do the wrap up of Moon as a Harsh Mistress, because it's all about the mind of Heinlein, right? That's what's driving this whole story.
But how do you feel about an authorized biography like this, where the family, in this case Virginia, his third wife, actually has input on what goes into the biography? Because don't you feel like that's going to be a little more, I don't know, maybe smoothed over than what a unauthorized biography could be?
Yeah, there's always positives and negatives to both sides. An unauthorized biography is more likely to get things wrong if you don't have the cooperation of the actual subject or the family, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to miss out on stuff. There's going to be information lacking, but you're more likely to be able to be honest about the things that you do get right. Whereas an authorized biography, everything is potentially right, unless the family tries to fudge it, tries to spin it.
Exactly.
So you're kind of relying on the subject to play by the rules and be honest and allow things that should be allowed. And I think most of the time people don't actually want to put lies in an authorized biography, but they may lie by omission. They may want to leave certain things out. They may want to make something sound a little less drastic than it was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's positives and negatives to both.
Well, I really want to hear more about this whole L. Ron Hubbard, like, affair situation with his second wife and the mm-hmm. sex magic and the Crowleyan, you know, religious studies and orgies and
There's a famous, if possibly apocryphal, story that Heinlein and Hubbard had a bet that Hubbard could start a religion. And that is how Scientology got started. Now, depending on who you ask, some people say they did that bet. Hubbard started to look into it and discovered the principles of Scientology, and it's totally legit and it's not a basis of the bet. And other people say, like, no, he just made up Scientology out of whole cloth as a part of this bet, and it got a hand. It all depends on who you talk to.
Yeah. Either way, totally fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, we should pause now to thank our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. So to do that, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword and pick the audiobook of your choice. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
You know what I'm going to pick?
What's that?
I am actually going to get into The Dark Tower. Stephen King.
The Dark Tower, wow.
Yeah. I have heard millions of times from other people that The Dark Tower series by Stephen King is awesome, first of all, and that listening to it on Audible is the best way to consume it because you really get a good read in that audiobook. So I'm going to try it out. That's my recommendation.
That's exciting. I read that series when I was way too young to really get the most out of it.
But I felt
really
that way about
scared.
A lot of it.
And there was a lot of stuff in the book.
Is it horror?
I think so. That's what my memory serves. And I've heard people talking about it since then, but I don't really remember. I mean, it's Stephen King, so it's got to be some kind of horror element to it, right?
Yeah, and this and The Stand seem to be the books by Stephen King that I hear brought up most often as influencing Lost mythology. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really interested in finding out how true that is.
That's very cool. Well, let's move on to the Barrier Sword. And the first topic is super interesting. It's actually from Stan. And he says he ran across this PDF to the 2005 movie script to The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Tim Minear. And he thought he'd share with us. And apparently, according to Tomahone, I hope I'm saying their name right. Tomahome?
Maybe.
They say that Tim Minear is a Joss Whedon cohort. And there's I'm flipping through this, and it's pretty interesting.
There's a lot of voiceover at the beginning of this movie.
A lot of Manny voiceover. Mm-hmm.
The history books got it wrong. This is how it really happened. So
Made
that's me.
On the Earth, blue and silent in the majesty of space. We're looking at it from the surface of the moon. A face bounces into frame. Manny, early 30s. He looks like he's about to vomit in the helmet of his pressure suit.
So that's me, Manuel Garcia O'Kelly Davis, proud loony.
He's yanked from view. A booted foot arcs through frame. Now his face reappears, twisted sideways in his helmet.
Okay, maybe not always proud, but always loony. That is, citizen of Luna, sometimes called the moon, but only ever by those live on Terra.
I think we could go on for a long time like that.
That was kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, I actually said in the thread that we might have to act this out on the show, and I think we did it justice.
Yeah, it's all Manny. Man, it's Manny for a long time.
It's got to be, right?
It's like Manny till page 20, I think.
Oh. Yeah, that's...
Oh, but there's Wyoming.
That's a lot
okay.
of Manny.
Oh, no, it's Manny until Mike.
Oh, good. Okay.
Then you,
yeah,
you
I don't think I can do a good
Mike's
Mike
the first person you meet.
I couldn't do a good Mike impression until he's Michelle, and even then my French is pretty bad.
There's a lot of voiceover, though.
Yeah. But hey, that happens in a lot of movies, right?
Yeah. You know, this opening reminded me of a combination of The Blade Runner with the voiceover... 2001 A Space Odyssey,
yeah.
And then like a million other like voiceover dominated.
I got a 2001 vibe also.
Yeah, it was the monkey scene, right?
Yeah.
If you click through and look, you'll know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All right, our next thread that we want to talk about in the Bear Your Sword user feedback segments is what else are you reading? The 2010 edition or the August 2010 edition, thanks to Sandy. Who started off the thread. I like this monthly, like, what else are you reading thread? Because everybody who's in this book club is usually reading two or three things at a time, mm-hmm. I have found. So I noticed that a lot of folks are reading, what was it that I saw a lot of? Gaslight Dogs.
Yeah,
a lot
I'm
of people are reading the
one.
Gaslight Dogs. Few folks are reading Perdido Street Station as well.
Karen Lawachi wrote The Gaslight Dogs. That sounds pretty interesting. I'm going to have to add that to my to-read list.
Terp Kristen has way too many books that she is bringing with her
awesome.
On her trip. That's awesome, though. Yeah, I'm actually still reading The Blade itself alongside Moon is a Harsh Mistress. And that's all I can handle. I can only handle two at a time.
Yeah, I'm still on... I finished The Blade itself. I'm on... Before They Are Hanged, and I'm also reading another book that I can't talk about.
Ooh, secret preview book, huh?
Preview book that I can't talk about, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to talk about.
Veronica's special.
But that's why I have to put off all my other reading for a little while to get through
NDA.
The secret book, NDA style. I'm brag-planing.
I know, exactly.
Which is my favorite new word.
Brag planing.
Yes. All right, what else do we have? We got the Mighty Tomes you plan to read eventually. I thought this was funny because there's a lot of really big books that I've been wanting to pick up, but you just can't really feel like you
have
time to do it. And this was started by Jenny, and she said her short list is Infinite Jest, of course.
Oh, that's on my list too, definitely.
That's also on my list. The Pillars of the Earth, which I have not read, and Ulysses.
That also, I have, like, I was it Jenny or someone else who said, started it a million times? Oh, yeah, it was Jenny. Mm-hmm. Started it a million times. And you know what? The one person I know who's read Ulysses all the way to the end read it with a guide. They sell a Ulysses guide that explains what, like, sort of the cultural references and things that you might not get. Mm-hmm. So it helps you to kind of work your way through all of that weird language and make it make more sense.
For me, I'm choosing The Broke Cycle.
Oh, yeah, I've read that. I plowed through that. I loved the Baroque cycle.
I know, that's why I'm jealous. I want to read it now.
I was just, as we were talking, I noticed that the Baroque cycle was out of order on my bookshelf. Cryptonomicon was between Quicksilver and the Confusion, which those two are sure not even supposed to be next to each other.
Mm. Not
so
good.
I fixed it. I actually got up and fixed it right now. yeah, I want to read Gravity's Rainbow, too. That was another one that folks had thrown out there as a big tome to attack. I don't think there's any... You know what? The Foundation series I consider to be sort of a tome by Isaac Asimov, and I have only read the first volume of that. I never plowed through to the rest of them, so I'd like to get into that.
Yeah, let us know what books, what giant tomes you've been wanting to read for a long time. I've been wanting to read... I only got a little bit way through it. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which is pretty long, if I remember correctly. I just couldn't get into it, but so many people have said they love it that I really want to push myself and get through what I feel are the boring first parts, which has stopped me from reading it.
One thing I've wanted to read all the way through to the end, which I never have, is the Mort d'Arthur, the one of the primary Arthurian legends.
Well, you are an Anglophile, so it's your right and your duty.
I like the Arthurian stuff, too.
It's your right and duty.
It's all my right and duty.
On to the Queen. Emails. Or the emails.
Yes, we got an email from Beth who says, "Greetings, Veronica and Tom. Imagine my surprise during the most recent episode's discussion of great television and literary crossovers when you failed to mention what has to be the single greatest crossover event in literary history. Planet X by Michael Jan Friedman, featuring the crew of Jean-Luc Picard's USS Enterprise and Professor Xavier's Mighty Mutants, the X-Men. A case of fan fiction gone legit. Thanks for the show. I enjoyed a great deal."
Wow.
So,
right.
Yeah.
That is pretty legit.
It's a little Patrick Stewart crossover.
I would enjoy that very much. Although my favorite crossovers that I think I mentioned was also involving Patrick Stewart. And that was the Next Generation DS9 crossover comic book series and show.
And speaking of Star Trek, we're very pleased to announce that we are going to be doing a live Sword and Laser from Dragon Con in Atlanta at 4 o'clock, I think in the Hyatt, but check your Dragon Con website to be sure. And we'll be interviewing David Gerrold, who writes a ton of Star Trek fiction and is also probably best known to many as the author of the Trouble with Tribbles episode of the original Star Trek.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that last year we had Timothy Zahn, who is known most for his Star Wars fiction, and now we actually have someone who's written for Star Trek.
That's right. He actually wrote for The Next Generation, for the animated series, and he's done a ton of works in The War Against the Cthor, I don't know how to pronounce it, Star Wolf, The Dingiliad, Trackers, and 3 Star Trek novels.
Very, very cool. Yeah, I'm very excited to get to know him and to talk to him a little bit on the live show. And it's actually at the Hilton Hotel.
Oh, it's at the Hilton. Okay, good.
The Crystal Ballroom, yeah.
The Crystal Ballroom.
We'll have to do lots of predictions this year.
So please come and bring a friend.
I mean,
and
geez.
Sit in 3 seats.
Yeah, take up
just lounge
space.
Out so it looks just like the room
down.
Is filled.
Because we've got events on our Sword and Laser page on Goodreads for the very first time. So you can RSVP to our events. We've got Sword and Laser Live at Dragon Con, which we just mentioned. And then we have the Sword and Laser / Twit meetup, also at Dragon Con, at the Westin Sundial Bar and Restaurant. And that is the day before our live show on September 4th at 6 p.m.
By the way, the sundial rotates.
Does it?
Yes.
Ooh.
I asked how fast when they told me that. They're like, no, it's really slow.
Well, the bar at the roof of the Westin that I stayed at, the Westin Bonaventure in L.A., also rotates.
Must be a thing with Westins, huh?
I guess so. That's pretty funny. So, yeah, we hope to see you all there. If you're going to Dragon Con, please come to Sword and Laser Live. Please come to the meetup and say hello. We're going to have T-shirts and pens, and it's going to be fun, good, ruckus time.
And very we would like to thank our partner Stickerfoo. Use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off stickers at stickerfoo.com. That's stickerfoo.com.
And if you want to get in touch with us, our email, as always, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. You can visit our website at swordandlaser.com and follow all the discussions over at Goodreads at the Sword and Laser discussion forums.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and keep on reading, and we will wrap up The Moon as a Harsh Mistress soon, I promise.
We'll see you next time.